Hello and welcome to Indie Business Podcast for Monday, August 23rd. I'm so excited to have you here. You have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by SoapEquipment.com. Did you know there was a supplier of equipment that you can use to make soap on a large scale, a small scale, and all of your bath and body products like bath bombs and other things to help you streamline your manufacturing process? And they cater specifically to small business owners just like you in the cosmetics industry. Check them out today at SoapEquipment.com. Well, you know, over the last few weeks, we have been devoting our shows to the H.R. 576, which is the Safe Cosmetics Act of 2010, which is a bill that has been introduced by several Democratic representatives in Congress. And we're just excited to be able to bring up-to-date information to you about the status of H.R. 5786. And also what's exciting for me is to be able to empower you to participate in the legislative process in a meaningful, productive, and influential way. And so today I'm excited to bring you someone who knows a lot about that. He is a small and independent business owner himself. His name is Dan Marshall. He is the founder and vice president of the Handmade Toy Alliance, and he also owns and manages Peapods, which is a company in Minnesota and a retail store that sells products designed specifically for children. And Dan has been active with the influencers in the small business arena who have been dealing with the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act of 2008, and he's going to share some of his experiences with us today and help us learn from his insights and some of the things that he and his colleagues have been doing on Capitol Hill over the past few years. Dan, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So, Dan, let's just start by telling our listeners a little bit about your business and how you got started. What's the inspiration for Peapods?
Well, we started out, it's my wife's business, and I kind of joined on, I guess, 9 years ago now. So we manage it as partners at this point. But she started out selling baby slings when my daughter was a baby. She's 14 now. And basically everywhere we went wearing our baby in a sling, people would ask where we got that. And we thought, wow, we could sell these. And so we started doing that, and it kind of took over our living room. And then we decided to open up a store, and now we sell everything from baby carriers to wood toys and clothes and natural baby care products like soaps and shampoos. Cloth diapers is another big category for us. So we're kind of like the alternative baby and kids store here in the Twin Cities. You know, we stay away from plastics, and we try to find as many locally made and domestically made products as possible. And it's been a lot of fun. We've been doing this now for like 12, 13 years, and we keep learning new stuff every day.
Well, it's so interesting to hear you say how your business started with your wife actually starting it when your baby was young. That is such a interesting and familiar story. Are you seeing more and more people sort of following that pattern where different industries and small businesses are concerned?
Yeah, totally. And I don't know what it was like before the internet, but it certainly seems like the internet makes that easier. That, you know, if you start doing something kind of unique and different and you can get out there in front of people in a way that you couldn't really do that before. And I'm talking about when we started, the internet was like, you know, print out this form and fax it to us, and we'll process your order for you.
That's right, I remember those days.
yeah, that was not that long ago, really, but that's when we started out. And so it's been really fun to watch that evolve, and as that's happened, the products have evolved, too. If you look just how much change has come to, like, cloth diapers in the past 15 years, it's kind of amazing how much innovation there's been, and I think a lot of that has been driven by this online community that wasn't really possible to do before.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same time, you know, we see a lot of really strong, vibrant small businesses of people who are supporting their families just by making things, and it isn't anything that people would look at and say, wow, that's a huge business or anything, you know, they're fairly small businesses. They just, you know, they support a family or it's extra income, but they make wonderful products, and it's really fun for us to work with all these dozens of little companies that are making really unique products, from wood teething rings to maple blocks or, you know, specialty bibs or writing interesting books or whatever, you know. From our point of view, it seems like there's been a real renaissance in small business and small-scale manufacturing in the past dozen years or so.
So exciting to see that. Now, what were you doing before you noticed your wife taking over your living room?
Well, yeah, I had a big company job. I was working at American Express. I helped set up small business retirement plans.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good job that paid the bills, but mm-hmm. when our business grew to the point where we needed, where it made sense for me to join, it was kind of a leap, you know, for me to do that. I happened to do it at the same time my son was born, so that was a really interesting time for us. But I haven't really looked back since, and I haven't regretted that at all. It's been a great choice.
So that is so wonderful to hear. I do hear of a lot of guys who are doing that. Their wives start something so they can be at home and do something that they enjoy, and then, you know, I don't know, however long, several months into the process, it starts to creep out of, you know, the small space that it was originally designated for, and then somebody takes a look at the checking account and goes, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
Looking at.
yeah, and, you know, I've had to learn a lot along the way, and, you know, Millie has too, but, I there are a lot of businesses like that, and I know a lot of other fathers, dads who've done the same kind of thing, kind of following their wives along with their inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's been fun for me to do that too. And
what advice quickly would you give to some of our listeners who are thinking about joining their spouse in a business they've started?
Well, it takes about a year to get used to working with each other day in, day out that way. I mean, no matter how well you know your spouse, I think it's a totally different type of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had to kind of like, you know, set out different responsibilities, like, okay, this is an area that I do and this is an area that Millie does, and kind of separate things out in a way that makes sense to us. But, you know, give it time, I think, would be my biggest piece of advice, and let it be flexible so that you can find a way for it to work. I guess the other thing is that it's been really helpful for us to have a store, and then we actually go home from the store, and we're not, like, living where we work. I think it would be a lot harder for us if we were, like, working and living in the same space.
How long did it take you to get to the point where you felt comfortable, you know, going out and signing a lease and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, well, she'd actually done that before I quit my job, so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was almost like once it was taking over our living room, the discussion was, well, I could just rent some office space, or we could rent some retail space, and the price was about the same from what she was looking into, so we're like, okay, sure, let's do a retail space, see what happens, and the rest just kind of happened.
Sounds great. Thank you for those tips. So, you know, you're tooling along in your business, and you sort of described what some of your focuses are, obviously on children and babies and young children.
Yeah.
And being able to buy and resell in your store products that are handmade and also products that are created in your local community. So
yeah.
What happened? We're going to talk about the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act. Let's just start with that. You had obviously never heard of it before a certain point in time. When was the first time you remember hearing about that legislation?
Well, yeah, and going back to 2007, it was a crazy year. Everyone all of a sudden got really concerned about toys made in China, and everyone desperately wanted products that weren't made in China, which was great. I mean, because we'd been specializing in that all along, and we had just this crazy year. It was crazy busy, and in the spring of 2007, we saw that this legislation was kind of perking along, and one of the things that was being proposed was mandatory third-party testing for toys, and, you know, in our naivety, you know, we were like, yes, you should be doing third-party testing on all these Chinese-made toys that are being made 100,000 at a time, you know, before you bring them into the country. That makes sense, right? But we didn't realize it would affect all these small manufacturers as well. And by the time that the law got passed, which is 2 years ago this month, we had no idea the impact it would have.
So this is really interesting. So you knew about the legislation before it passed, but
yeah,
it seemed to be only applying to large multinational companies that were importing toys from China, since that was sort of what was on the radar at the time.
Well, yeah, we thought that was a no-brainer. It was like, well, duh, that's where the problem is. And obviously, if they're going to pass a law, I'm assuming that they're going to target it where the problem is. And that was, I think, the one thing I regret the most is I didn't find out more about this law and try to figure out what was happening beforehand. And I know we'll probably get to this, but I think you're really lucky in a sense with the Safe Cosmetics Act, as they're calling.
Mm-hmm.
That you're actually getting involved with your member, with other people before it's become a law. Because once it becomes a law, it's really hard to change, and that's what we've been learning about with the CPSIA.
Right.
So yeah, by 2008, then they put this law together, and we still thought it was a great law, and then they passed it, and then I started talking to some of my vendors, like, what are you going to do to comply with this? Because I thought, you know, third-party testing, that relatively simple process. That's what, like $100 or something. And I started asking some of our suppliers what kind of quotes that they were getting. And this one company that makes these beautiful cherry rattles for us out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, they're getting quoted $4,000 to test one rattle.
Oh my!
Yeah, I know. And this was, you know, they're going to test it for lead. They're going to test it for phthalates. They're going to test it for small parts and breaking and whether it spontaneously combusts and all these things. And at that point I realized that, wow, this is really untenable. No one that we deal with is going to be able to survive, and the only people left standing are going to be Mattel and the other large companies that caused the problem in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So had Handmade Toy Alliance been formed at that point?
No. In November then of 2008, which was a couple months after the law was passed and signed into law by President Bush, I started calling some of our competitors and a lot of our vendors and saying, hey, what are you doing about this? Should we get together? And I decided to just name something called the Handmade Toy Alliance and start recruiting members, and it kind of took off from there, because the more people looked into it, the more they got quotes, the more unreasonable and ridiculous the requirements for small batch manufacturers started to seem, and we felt like we needed to raise the alarm quickly about what the consequences of this bill were, and whether they were intended or unintended.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't think it was all fair that we should all have to go out of business because of, you know, the people outsourcing manufacturing to China and not keeping track of their production process.
And so we want to make sure we tell anyone who's listening to go check out the website. It's toyalliance.com, is that right?
It's actually handmadetoyalliance.com.
Handmadetoyalliance.com. So if
yep.
you have a friend or you yourself, you're thinking about going into this industry, this is a really good place to start and get some information. So this was actually put together sort of in response to this bill. I think you said it was signed into law in around September time frame, and then by November of that year, 2008, you and some of your colleagues had started the Handmade Toy Alliance.
That's correct, yeah.
And so the bill was signed into law in September. It became effective, as I recall, was it January 2009?
Well, it was signed into law in August. And one of the horrible things about this law is it had these kind of rolling effective dates. So parts of it came into effect immediately, parts of it came into effect in December of that year, and parts of it still haven't come into effect.
Okay, so it's obviously still a process. So, I mean, this must have come as a big surprise that there would be sort of a one-size-fits-all piece of legislation to govern different types of people who weren't similarly situated in the same industry.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you look at how food, for example, is regulated, you know, if you get above a certain size, you have to get your product tested, and you have to have the nutrition label on it as a result of that test. So it says, you know, know, this is how many grams of fat, this is how much protein, this is the vitamin content, and so forth, right? But they exempt small manufacturers from doing that. And we had, I had assumed that a similar thing would be part of the CPSI, but there's nothing of the sort. The law just says that everyone who makes a children's product is responsible for third-party testing to show that it doesn't have lead, that it doesn't have phthalates, and that it meets the ASTM use and abuse standards of the toy.
Oh, okay. Well, this is such a, it's interesting to see the parallel. I mean, it's obviously a different time frame. It's 3 years later. It's a different industry. But it does seem so interesting to me that this is an issue. And you talked earlier, Dan, about how the Internet has made it possible for men and women like you and your wife to start businesses and be profitable at them, because we can all start a business. It's actually running one and making money. That's the tricky part.
Sure.
And so are there other industries that make you think about this in terms of, do we have to think in terms of our lawmakers understanding that, you know, different companies are now entering industries, whereas before there was always just, you know, one sort of kind of company that could manufacture these kinds of things? I'm asking this question as we have to go to break. So when we come back, we're going to ask Dan that question. Now, what is he noticing? He's been out there. He's been on Capitol Hill for the last 3 years dealing with this issue. So we're going to talk with him about these things. This is Indie Business Podcast. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to the Indie Business Podcast. I'm talking today with Dan Marshall. He is a founder and vice president of the Handmade Toy Alliance at HandmadeToyAlliance.com. He also owns, with his wife in Minnesota, a retail store and an online store that sells children's and baby products that are locally made and made in the USA. So we could cue the applause if we had any for that. Very exciting about that. But Dan, before we took our break, you were sharing a little bit about how this legislation came about. So I'd like to have your thoughts on the big picture. Are you seeing that it's necessary for small businesses to become more involved in the legislative process, not just in your industry, but in others as well?
Across the board. I mean, whether it's baby carriers or organic food or what have you, I think there is a general process of increased regulation in Washington, and the people that are best positioned to shape that regulation are the large companies, who often are the ones creating the problems that are spurring the regulation in the first place. And I think small business of all kinds really needs to be part of that process and to know what's going on and to really carefully look at legislation and regulations from various agencies, you know, before they become law, so that you can have a voice and direct what happens, because what we've found, it's really hard to change something after it becomes law. I think of the Food Safety Act, and the way that law was originally written, there would have been an annual fee that every producer of food for resale would have to pay to the FDA, and that would have shut down a whole chunk of people that just sell at the weekly farmers market, And luckily they were able to get that changed somewhat. It still isn't entirely advantageous toward small producers, but it's somewhat better than it used to be. And in industry by industry, I think we've come to a point where you really have to be paying attention, because these big companies can use these laws to actually improve their situation, because it's easier for them to comply with these regulations a lot of times than it is for small manufacturers, who oftentimes are more responsible to begin with.
Well, that is really something to be concerned about. And certainly just the idea, though, of what you're doing in terms of having influence on behalf of obviously your business as well as other similarly situated companies. You guys are such an excellent example, Dan, it seems to me, of what all of us can do as small business owners, so that whoever is behind the laws that are being passed are not able to pass those laws with only their interests being discussed at the table.
Well, exactly, and we kind of had to elbow ourselves into the Consumer Product Safety Commission's agenda and elbow our way into the Congressional Oversight Committee to, you know, get a hearing and get a seat at the table when they had the hearing. But nothing is just given to you. It's not like when they are thinking about writing a bill, they say, oh, you know, we should find out what small business thinks about this.
Yeah.
You know, and then they go searching for small businesses that would be affected, you know, which would be perhaps logical, but that is not what anybody does. You have to actually fight your way to the table, and then once you're there, you can represent the needs of your membership or the needs of the other businesses like yours. But you have to be able to organize that, and you have to be able to get the media paying attention to you before you can even get your foot in the door. Mm-hmm. And I guess the number one thing I've learned is that it really makes sense nowadays to be part of a trade association that is looking out for the interests of companies like yours. And if there isn't one that fits your needs, then you need to be part of forming one, because in this day and age, I think it makes a lot of difference. And it means, you know, lowering some thoughts about competition. It means reaching out to people that you compete with and say, hey, we have a common interest in maintaining our businesses by working together to make sure that a rule isn't written in such a way that we all go out of business, or a law isn't put together that makes it impossible for us to stay in business, because without watching out for that sort of thing, it is possible for that to happen, and I have seen it happen in a couple of different areas so far, and it's very distressing, and it's a time now, I think, that in a lot of markets, in a lot of lines of business, you see large manufacturers have their own representation, but small manufacturers don't, small retailers don't, and whether it's getting together with other local business owners to work on improving local retail, or getting together with other soap and cosmetic manufacturers to work together to influence legislation, I think it's incredibly important nowadays to be doing that and keep your eyes open.
Good that you said that. And of course, we do have the Indie Beauty Network is a trade organization that I started for cosmetics companies, and then there's also the Handcrafted Soap Makers Guild, which deals mainly with soap makers, but also soap makers manufacture other than soap products. So they deal with people that manufacture soaps and cosmetics as well. And then there are other, you know, smaller sort of group types of organizations across the nation. You may find them on Meetup. You may find them, you know, having an annual sort of gathering. And these organizations, Dan, may not be, you know, formalized and incorporated like the Indie Beauty Network and the Soap Guild, but they can make a difference too, can't they?
Yeah, they certainly can, and I think it's incredibly important to be part of groups like that and to support them and to actively participate in them, because you need to know when something's happening that's going to change your business. And I've come to believe that it's not good to be influenced, to be affected by national news events, you know. But when you are, you need to know about them, and you need to have a way to represent your interests. And you can't just do that as a single business owner. You have to have a group of businesses working together.
And look what you did. So by Christmas time that year, 2008, right after the bill became law, you and some of your colleagues had formed the Handmade Toy Alliance. So the new year gets here, and what happens next? You've got this new law. Everybody's right scrambling around trying to figure out exactly what it says, when does it take effect, what do we have to do.
Yeah.
And what sorts of things began to happen? How you guys started shaking things up a little bit.
Yeah, well, the first thing that we were able to argue for was that, you know, natural materials shouldn't have to be tested for lead, right? We shouldn't have to be paying these really expensive tests to test wood or, you know, fabrics or other things that everyone knows has never contained lead and couldn't possibly contain lead unless, you know, you happen to be storing them next to a smelter, you know. So that was the first thing that we argued for, and we actually got that pretty quickly from the CPSC, was an exemption from lead testing for natural materials and fabrics that aren't coated with plastics. And that was incredibly helpful. That helped a lot of people.
What was that process like? I mean, the law obviously did not specifically say that exemption existed. So what, just high-level overview, what did you have to do to get that written into the regulations?
Well, I think a lot of us, you know, we reached out to our state, or to our senators and our representatives, and tried to get meetings with them to talk about our concerns about this law. We got quotes from different testing labs showing the cost of it. We wrote to the Small Business Administration that has an office of advocacy, and we solicited their help on it. And we just reached out everywhere we possibly could, and then the media kind of picked it up as well. So by that Christmas, we had some great articles in the Associated Press and in the Los Angeles Times, and so that was a very busy month or two there. But I think the CPSC was willing to make that change. It was a fairly easy change for them to do. It helped a lot of people, but it was by no means, you know, the complete solution for us, and there's still a lot of other tests that are mandated by the law that are causing problems for people.
Mm-hmm. I understand there was a march on Washington of some sort?
Yeah, another group put together a rally that we participated in April 1st of 2010, or no, 2009 rather. And so that was helpful, but we started to see kind of a disturbing thing, and that was that we were getting the most support from the Republican side of the bench. And over the past year or so, we've been trying really hard to work with the Democrats. They're the ones in charge, and I think they have a natural interest in helping small businesses, but it's become a lot more politicized, and some people have brought it to be a real Republican versus Democrat thing, and it almost has a Tea Party flavor to it right now for some of the people working on CPSIA reform, and that's been frustrating for me because it was a bipartisan law when it was passed, and I think it's going to have to take a bipartisan solution. But unfortunately, the Democrats have been really recalcitrant in making changes. The consumer groups are really close in with them, and mm-hmm. although we've been reaching out as much as we can to different consumer groups, and I think they see a lot of what we're concerned about,
mm-hmm.
We haven't had a lot of success in actually getting the legislation changed or amending it.
Let me ask you this, just in terms of, you know, what other people may be experiencing going forward. Certainly, that sort of split is frustrating. Probably doesn't help small businesses on either side. But you know, I'm just wondering if that seems like sort of ironic, actually, that's the split. Do the Democrats that you've been working with, do they kind of see this as a jobs issue? And I'm asking because I see it as a jobs issue. Small businesses like yours and mine and my members, it's not like we can run out and start another business tomorrow or even in this economy get another job. So
exactly.
When we're put out of business, we're also put out of a job. And has that been urged, or is that an accepted position?
Yeah, it certainly is. However, the feedback we keep getting, and this is part of the frustration with the way the law is working, because the law had these phased implementation dates, and some of the big ones have been stayed for several years in a row, so that the full impact of the law hasn't yet been felt by small businesses. And so a lot of the policymakers, especially Democrats, have been saying, well, give us a list of the companies that have closed because of this law, you know, or tell me how many jobs have been lost as a result of this law. And A, that's really hard to find, you know, when you're just like trying to figure out how many little mom-and-pop operations have gone out of business. And B, we're all still kind of hanging on there and hoping that this can get changed before it gets fully implemented. And our point has always been, why do we have to have good businesses go out of business before we can document to you the harm of this law? Can't you just see that, it's set up in a way that it is going to destroy small businesses for no good reason? And can't we just change it before that happens? Why do we have to wait until lots of people have lost their livelihoods before we fix this law? And so that's been
a really good question. I can see how that would point to a large benefit of finding out about it before it gets passed onto the agency level.
Yeah. It's really sad. I mean, it's like, why do we all have to go out of business before you're going to leave us, you know? But
mm-hmm.
I guess that's how it works.
So what impact, if any, did the rally have? How'd that go?
Well, I think it helped galvanize people and bring us all together, and I think that was a step in the process. But it also, I think, because only Republican congresspeople showed up for that, it was also somewhat disheartening that to see that it was being played like that. From there, I think, you know, there have been a number of things that have helped. You know, we put together a petition. We got like 25,000 signatures on the petition and presented that. But what's worked more than anything is just getting individual members of the Handmade Toy Alliance to get in front of their senators, to show up at the town meetings and tell their stories, and to set meetings with their representatives and say, hey, this needs to change.
Yeah, that's really good advice. We're going to come back and talk about that. Dan Marshall just said that there's lots of things that are effective, and it really does take, right, Dan, efforts from all levels. But one of the most important things he just said is for individual business owners to actually show up in person in front of our lawmakers and share their stories. We're kind of going to come back and talk about how to do that. We're going to talk a little bit, too, about congressional hearings and what they were for in your case, Dan, and how those were set up. This is the Indie Business Podcast. We're talking with Dan Marshall of the Handmade Toy Alliance about the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act's effect on small businesses. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to the Indie Business Podcast. We're talking with Dan Marshall, Vice President of the Handmade Toy Alliance and also the owner of a toy retail store and online store in Minnesota. Dan, before we took our break, you were sharing about the petition. You said 25,000 signatures. That is fantastic. Congratulations to you. What did you do with that, and what was the impact of that?
Yeah, well, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, which is the agency that enforces this law, had a workshop last December, so December 2010, that we were able to participate in. It was kind of designed to gather feedback from stakeholders on certain aspects of the law. And at that point, we set a meeting with the chairman of the commission, Inez Tenenbaum, and we were able to present the petition to her at that point. We also had the opportunity at that point to meet with several of the commissioners. And so that was helpful. I think the, you know, the petition helped show how much support we have and what a concern this is. I don't know. I don't know how it impacted their decisions there.
Okay, but it was part of the process was presenting that. Was it ever presented to lawmakers? I guess not, because your law had passed by the time this started.
Yeah, this particular petition was addressed specifically to the CPSC, and I think we'll refer back to it as we continue to respond to the different parts of their implementation process.
Okay, great. So you had the rally, you had the petition, and you had a series of workshops at the Consumer Product Safety Commission. Did those come about by your organization and other people specifically requesting that?
Well, I think it was a response to the CPSC was trying to, you know, make it look. They were getting a number of calls from representatives and senators who were saying, what are you doing about this law? I'm getting calls from my constituents saying that they're going to go out of business because of this. You need to make sure that doesn't happen. And so I think the commission was making an effort to at least appear to be reaching out to small businesses and affected industries, and so that was why they put together this particular workshop. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like the input that we all gave them during those workshops has been folded into their policy very much, and so that's been kind of frustrating as well.
It is interesting that you're saying that the impetus for it was the small business owners calling their legislators.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, one way or the other, you have to get through to your representation. You know, you have to get to them. For me, we're in Minnesota. I've worked really closely with Senator Klobuchar's office, who I think has been very helpful for us, and she was able to write a letter to the CPSC about exempting natural materials fairly early on. But I've been working with her office for 2 years now. She's a Democrat, and I think she's been very helpful for us. And she understands, you know, what we're going through, but unfortunately it hasn't yet risen to the level of actually amending or changing the law, and that's something we'd still like to see happen. But, one way or the other, you have to get the attention of your elected representatives, and that means, you know, reaching out with other local constituents who are affected by that bill and try to get appointments with the staff and get commitments from them about what they're going to do to help you out.
And so what is that process like? I mean, obviously you can get an appointment, you call, you say who you are, you make an appointment. Is it always easy? I mean, do they sometimes,
No, as far as I can tell, it's incredibly impossible. What you have to do is you have to get the media to write about your story, and then you can take the story to your representation. For one of our members, Jolie Fay out of Oregon, she actually showed up at a town hall meeting that Senator Merkley was having and stood up and told her story, and she was so persuasive that they scheduled a meeting with her shortly after that. For me, I contacted Senator Klobuchar's office, and I wasn't getting a lot of reaction from her local people, and then I said, well, I tell you what, we're going to have a press conference here at our store with five other companies or so that we buy from locally who are going to get shut down because of this bill. So if Senator Klobuchar was able to have a comment for that, then that would be helpful. And about an hour later, I got a call from her.
Okay, now
this
is very interesting and so instructive that because really, if we think about it, ultimately, a representative is going to meet with you, particularly in election year, right? If you're willing to come down to the office, maybe the lawmaker won't be there, but they'll have a staffer there. Someone will sit there for 20 minutes or half hour or whatever and talk to you. But you're saying that the more effective way to do it is to use your ability as a local physical presence in the area to bring local media into your store to talk about a small business issue. And then let a lawmaker or other influencer know this is what's going to happen and invite them to participate.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. Showing up at a town hall meeting can be really effective too, especially if you're respectful and you have a really good story to tell and you can tell it in a way that gets across what you need, which was what Jolie was able to do. Other times it just means you just keep calling until you get in touch with the person who works on policy for that particular area of the law and set a meeting with them. sometimes it means going to Washington and actually, you know, setting a meeting with the Washington staff, because those are the people who are actually in charge of putting legislation together. The local staff often aren't. So some of our East Coast folks have had more success setting meetings in Washington and then showing up.
And during an election year, I would imagine that a lot of the lawmakers are actually going to be spending more time over the next 3 or 4 months in their local areas, so they may be more active there than they otherwise might be.
Yeah, most of them should be in district now because Congress is in recess, and so setting a meeting right now is something that is actually possible to do. So if you wanted to do that, I would say get together with 3 or 4 other local people. If we're talking about, you know, Safe Cosmetics, find 3 or 4 other local people who make products that would be affected by that law. Say, hey, we are your constituents. We would like to talk to you about how this law would impact our businesses. When can we come in and talk? And, you know, I think that would have an impact. I think that would get you a meeting with at least a high-level staffer or possibly the representative or senator themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess that would also give you the opportunity after that to use social media, or even if you have you know, press releases that you do, to let the media know about those meetings either before or after they occur.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and then to follow up too, and continue forwarding, you know, like I forward my Toy Alliance news releases to my contacts at Senator Klobuchar's office, and our other members do the same thing with their members that they've been working with, and just keep them in touch, make sure they know that we're still working on this.
Great idea to continue letting them know, and certainly that's a nice way to keep that door open, keep that information flowing. So,
yeah.
Dan, what is the status of the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act? Now, I know there is not, or correct me if I'm wrong, an enhancement bill that is currently pending that would address the issues you're concerned about?
Well, it was kind of a draft of an amendment that might possibly help us, but it kind of lost energy. Republicans and Democrats wouldn't agree to work together on it to actually make it a meaningful reform for small businesses. We were supporting it as an organization, but we're also asking for them to make the changes more meaningful and more specifically exempting small businesses from third-party testing requirements. And at this point, it's kind of fizzled out, and after the whole Toyota crisis and the whole oil crisis, which is handled by, you know, the Gulf Mexico crisis, which is handled by the same committee, it's really doubtful that anything is going to happen on that bill before the next Congress is sworn in. So we kind of have to start over with the next Congress, and depending on what that looks like, it, you know, our chances may be better or worse than with the current Congress. So.
Right, right. So, you know, let's ask you another question about another industry. I've recently been reading about cadmium in jewelry.
And
so, okay, there's another industry where I don't see legislation, at least not now. I haven't seen it coming down the pike. So for people who make jewelry, what would you suggest they do at this point? I mean, obviously, start looking at the issue. And, I mean, well, let me ask you this too, Dana. I don't mean to, like, throw too many questions at you at once, but...
Yeah.
I mean, what are you seeing here in terms of the big picture? I mean, you've been on Capitol Hill and you've testified about some of this stuff. It seems to me that at some point, before your children and my children are old enough to own a business, that our nation as a whole is going to have to really look at this issue and create some new policy that addresses these types of issues across the board so they don't have to be looked at piecemeal.
Well, I mean, yeah, the cadmium thing is a perfect example of what's happening here. We have the media going crazy over a particular issue, state and federal politicians having a knee-jerk reaction, and writing bills that may or may not help the situation, but in all cases make it harder for small businesses to stay in business. And then we move on to the next thing. So the cadmium and jewelry, you know, obviously cadmium doesn't have any place in any consumer product other than inside of a rechargeable battery, as far as I can tell. However, again, it gets back to people cutting corners, and there being excess cadmium available in China, and that was being used to melt in with tin or whatever else they were making children's jewelry out of. And I don't know that any child was ever actually hurt by that, whether they actually, you know, anybody was actually ever injured, but nonetheless, it wasn't just the federal government reacting to it after the AP broke the story back in January. Dozens of state governments started looking at laws that would require, that would ban cadmium in jewelry or require testing of jewelry or just children's jewelry or all children's products, and it was just all over the board. And the federal government was trying to put a law together as well. And so you end up with, I think at this point, several state laws have been passed, and if you actually make jewelry now, especially children's jewelry, you're subject to a few kind of different laws throughout the country depending on where you are, and you really need to know what's going on with that. And I'm not an expert on it, but it seems like it made it really difficult to stay in that business.
Well, what is some of the response that you've heard when you talk about, well, if we're going to have a federal law, are we also going to have 50 states be able to do whatever they want to as well? Is that...
Yeah, exactly.
How did that issue get addressed, or how is it being addressed?
Well, I don't know. I mean, here in Minnesota, you know, I tried to work with our local state government to say, you know, the federal government is the one that needs to be regulating cadmium and jewelry, not the state government, you know, but they really felt like they wanted to pass a law. So luckily, I think they lost energy on it as the news story died, but in other states that didn't happen. And I don't, you know, from a policy point of view, whether you're Republican or Democrat, I don't know how you can justify, you know, dozens of different state laws across the country regulating something that is really a matter for the federal government to regulate. And so that's another part that really scares me. And I think the deeper issue here is we need to learn how to buy products from people that we, that are closer to us, that we can see how the products are made, and that we can respect how that they're made, and not, and get past this idea of outsourcing everything to countries where we have no idea what's being made.
It's interesting that you say that, where we talk about the state federal issue and, you know, what regulations control and things like that, and saying that we want to educate people about buying things locally.
Yeah.
But leave it to the federal government to regulate them. I'm not taking a position. I'm just
wondering
how that sounds to some people.
I'm saying you should buy. It doesn't need to be made locally for you to understand and know how it was made and where it was made.
Okay. So you just need people that you can connect with because they're small business owners. Maybe you have a rapport with them, even if they're not in your own backyard.
Yeah, but if you're buying a piece of cheap metal jewelry out of a vending machine, you know, in a grocery store, do you have any idea where that was made? You don't.
Yeah.
You're never going to. If you go to Walmart, do you know where any of the products that they're selling are made? No.
That's
you have no idea.
It's a real people issue. We need to learn how to buy products from other real people.
From people, yeah.
Yeah,
that's my belief, yeah. But at the same time, we need to tone down the fear, and so much decision-making and policy-making is being driven by fear without any real understanding of underlying risk, that we are legislating away a whole bunch of stuff that really is part of being human, it's part of childhood, and there's a real danger to me that the idea of the bubble-wrapped child, we're getting closer and closer to that every day, I think, and we need to, you know, really think about the fear that we're putting into our politics. And, you know, if the most recent example of it is the story of the eggs that had salmonella in them. I don't know if you've run into that, but, you know, factory farms with salmonella contaminated eggs. Well, if you're concerned about that, go to the farmer's market and buy fresh eggs at the farmer's market, you know.
Right.
And that's the solution to me. The solution is not, let's make a law that's going to require every egg producer to test their eggs. You know, we could have, you know, different levels for factory farms doing a certain level of testing, but, you know, if you're a consumer, your response shouldn't be fear, it should be action. It should be, let's find somebody that we trust to buy these from instead of buying them at Walmart or Target or, you know, the big giant grocery store.
It all comes down to educating and informing yourself at the end of the day, right? Whether you're buying it or making it and selling it.
That's my feeling, yeah.
Excellent. excellent advice from Dan Marshall, the founder and vice president of the Handmade Toy Alliance, and also the owner of Peapods. Dan, tell us where we can go to get some of your and your wife's products online.
Yeah, it's peapods.com.
How easy is that? Peapods.com, P-E-A-P-O-D-S.com. I think you'll be inspired and encouraged by their business and their story and everything that you've shared with us. Dan, thank you so much for taking time from your day to give us some tips and insights into your experience dealing with legislators, policymakers, lawmakers, agency representatives, and the whole nine yards. You really have pounded out a trail for other people to follow, and we do see you as a leader, you and your colleagues as a leader in sharing some of the things that we should be doing as well. We really appreciate you being here. And thank you as well for joining and listening. You can get the show on iTunes, of course, and also at my blog on Indie Business Blog, where you'll be able to see a summary and also click to listen to the whole entire show right here on the Indie Business Podcast. Dan, thanks so much for joining. Thanks for listening. I'll see you here next week on Indie Business Podcast. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.